2FM with Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You're very welcome to the Friday edition of Game On. Thank you very much to Jenny Green and everyone involved for getting us that little bit closer to the weekend. And we are hoping to bring you, I was going to say an hour of good sporting chat, but at this stage it's 57 minutes of good sporting chat between now and 7 o'clock. Coming up today, Championship 2021 is here. Shane McGrath, Darren O'Sullivan will be with us to preview the Gaelic Games weekend, where two All-Ireland finalists will aim to get back to winning ways.
Has he got it? He has.
Super.
It's a really good kick.
Well, he was under a lot of pressure on that. A defender, obviously, in a very advanced position. And then he elects to go for the slicer from the tight angle. And he gets the execution perfect. So top marks to Stephen Cole.
Short ball for Austin Gleeson, who's come out around midfield. He's available for the hand pass again. Here it comes. Gleeson, middle of the field, just along the sideline. That is fantastic. Austin Gleeson, hello. He has arrived in Croke Park.
When Marty Morrissey says that, you know it's true. Anyway, as well as that, after a brief respite from the Euros, the round of 16 is now upon us. Conan Byrne and Fergal Brennan with us to talk knockout football.
You know, we were top of the group. We didn't concede a goal. A lot of top sides conceded a lot of goals. And if you want to carry on winning this tournament, if you want to go on to win this tournament, you know, you need to have zeros. You know, you need to stop the ball going in the back of the net. But of course, we need to flourish at the top end as well. And we've got that world-class talent who have shown that all season.
Former Republic of Ireland Declan Rice international in action this weekend. We've also got Jane Mangan's thoughts on the Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby and the rest of the sports news ahead of a very busy weekend.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us, our number is 51552. You can tweet us at GameOn2FM. There's a very scientific study to be done some night. Which generates the most needless amounts of texts? Mention of Roy Keane and Saipan 19 years on, or mention of Declan Rice and Jack Grealish? Have the text started to come in yet? I will check in a second. Anyway, it's great to have your company. Thank you for being with us this Friday evening. A lot to squeeze in between now and 7 o'clock and an awful lot of sport ongoing at the minute. And I've said it on multiple occasions in the past, one of the great pleasures of this job is to be able to bring you news of Irish success on the international stage. And a man that is absolutely setting the world on fire this weekend at the BMW International Open in golf is Niall Carney. 4-under par round of 68 today has taken him to 11-under par. He was very well placed yesterday. He is now the leader, two shots clear of a group of players on 9-under ahead of the weekend. Plenty of Irish in action. Padraig Harrington, the Ryder Cup captain, still trying to show how competitive he can be. He is 1-under par for the tournament after a 1-under par 71 today. Not going quite the way we would have wanted for either Jonathan Caldwell or Paul Dunne. Their weekend's work is done at this stage, both of whom have are outside what is the projected cut. They're going to miss the cut. Caldwell, 3-over par round of 75 today to finish on 1-over, and Paul Dunne 1-over par today to fall back to 2-over par. But I think Jonathan Caldwell in particular, a massive couple of weeks for him, a European Tour winner very recently, securing that 2-year exemption, which I would imagine you would forgive him if his head wasn't exactly where it might need to be these current weeks. We've also got action this week on the LPGA Tour, the Women's PGA Championship, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, the third golf major of the year on the LPGA Tour, the Women's Tour, two Irish involved. We are still awaiting the start of the second round for Leona Maguire. She's set to tee off later. She's level par, currently in a tie for 32nd place. The lead is at 7-under par, held by Céline Boutier of France. Stephanie Meadow has had it's been a mixed week for her. She opened with a 78 yesterday. She shot a 69 today, 3-under par, which brings her back to 3-over par. So certainly we would hope for a bit of a charge from Leona Maguire today. There's a load of very low rounds have been shot or in the process of being shot. No more so from Céline Boutier. An 8-under par round so far today with 15 holes played has taken her to 7-under par. So she has pretty much come from nowhere. And we would hope that Leona could be in a position to do likewise when she gets on the tee shortly. And Seamus Power's recent run of form, certainly an upward word curve for him. He's two under par for his round today with 17 holes played. He's on the final hole, this at the Travelers Championship on the PGA Tour. Two under par today, six under par he is for the tournament. Currently in a tie for sixth place. The lead there held by Bubba Watson with a group of players, including Russell Henley, one shot off the pace at seven under par. So certainly a very impressive weekend for Irish golfers. Long may that continue, and we'll do our very best to keep you updated on Seamus's round, and likewise Leon if she gets underway while we're on air. And a big weekend for Niall Kearney to come as well. In addition to that, it's a few bits and pieces of news hanging around. We mentioned last night we're going to chat about transfer news in a couple of minutes' time or later on in the programme. We're kind of in that situation where it's contract business being done, really. We've got new deals at Arsenal for Kieran Tierney, new long-term contract for him. It's reported to be 5 years. Likewise, we had that deal for Kevin Kelleher yesterday. So I think, are we still in that situation where we're waiting for one transfer to just start the merry-go-round? And when those things are going to get mental, and managers and clubs who said they have absolutely no interest in spending money will either choose to do so or be forced to do so. So we will wait and see how that plays out. We've also got action today. Big win last weekend for Ireland's under-20s in the Six Nations. And they're in action at 8 o'clock this evening. They're in action against Wales. The entire tournament being held at Cardiff Arms Park. So we'll wait and see how Richie Murphy's side get on and wish them well. Coverage of that match is on RTE2 and the RTE Player. It is, as you will be aware, no doubt, if you're into sport, it is a massive summer of sport. We've got the Olympics to come. We've got Euro 2020 ongoing on RTE. The Lions to come to radio later on in the year, and everything else in a couple of weeks' time. And the minor matter of the GAA Championship getting underway this weekend. We're going to chat football later in the programme with Darren O'Sullivan, but let's get stuck straight into the Gaelic Games weekend.
Game on. Hurling.
So let's look ahead to the Championship weekend from a hurling perspective. Delighted to say Shane McGrath's with me. It must be like Christmas Eve for you at this stage, is it?
Oh, sure. I think for everyone now, Damon, that we're finally here, and there's even a few people getting to go to the matches. Like, you know, look, if we compare to where we were this time last year, Damon, I think there was clubs getting back training. So, like, how far have we come? And just to say that we have Championship now, and we've had a fine league, I suppose. 'Twas grand, it was what it was. A lot of shadow boxing. But now, it's Championship now. League is league. It's done and dusted. There'll be no more tired players. No more we had a training block. No more anything. And you'll have all the best players on the pitch. And the most important thing is you'll have all the best players on the pitch fresh. Because I don't think we've seen that, Damien, in the league. Like, I think most people could see that. Say, if take Limerick, for example, while they had maybe 10 or 11 of their, say, their starting 15 from the All-Ireland final, you know, you could see that they weren't at full tilt. And a lot could be saying could be said maybe for the Galways and the Waterfords and the Tips. You know, so I think that's the best thing about this, Damien, is that we're getting a championship where all the best players that are available will be out there, will be fresh, and there's you can't compare the two, like, you know.
But come here, talk to me then about how risky that is. That, you know, managers will say, ah, we're not holding nothing back. But we all know they're holding something back. Particularly, you look at, of the three fixtures this weekend, two of them were paired in the league. And you're not going to show your hand to your opponent in the championship a couple of weeks in advance. But how much can you trust that sense of it'll be all right on the night, or what we've been working on in training will automatically transfer itself to the field of play this weekend?
It's a very good question, Damon. Like, I think, why do I feel this championship might be better than last year's? Well, first of all, I suppose the time of year it's on. You know, like, we were lucky enough, Damon, me and you, to be at the All-Ireland final. And, you know, while Croke Park, it looked really good. It just wasn't the same because the grass wasn't growing. And because of that, you know, it would affect the play. The air is a bit colder. The slitter, you know, might be travelling as far. You know, maybe people are giving out it's travelling too far. Maybe they'd rather a colder air. But, like, I think the difference in this is that if you take the league for the last few years where it ran into the championship, players would have been back to their clubs for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, played a couple of club games. Whereas now, you know, they've all been together. They've all been planning meticulously. And I think that's why it's going to make for a great championship, because everybody knows who they're playing a championship, you know, from a good bit back. But, you know, their league is done now, and they've been planning meticulously about who they're playing. Like, I think the Cork-Limerick thing is fascinating, because I was only looking at it there recently, like, the amount of goals that Cork have scored in the league this year. They've scored 18 goals compared to 11 last year and 4 the year before from, right? So I'm sure Cork are looking, Damien, to say, like, if we want to beat Limerick, like, I think the question on everyone's lips is not, you know, how good are Limerick? Is can anyone beat Limerick? Mm. And I think Cork will look have looked at that now and said, if we were to beat Limerick, right, they're getting 30 points, I think, is their average in Championship hurling last year. You're probably not going to get 30 points against Limerick the way they set up. So I'm sure Cork are saying, we need to get 2-3 goals to win it. So even that one factor, and like Limerick or Cork are now till the following weekend, but to see that Cork are probably planning to say, for us to beat Limerick, we're going to need to get goals. And I think every team is the same. Like, so I think that's why... I think that's why we're gearing up for a really, really good championship this year, Damien, with all those factors to be taken into account. Like.
But and how much of a benefit is it to the big counties, say, that the safety net does exist, unlike the football championship, where you know this weekend we're going to bid farewell to so many teams across the football championship?
Yeah, we're very lucky in that, in the hurling. I suppose, you know, maybe it's a numbers game in that the amount of teams you have in the Liam McCarthy in comparison to the amount of teams they're playing for Sam Maguire, Damien, I suppose. Like, so I think, you know, all the hurling community are delighted that the teams are going to get a second chance at it. Like, but I suppose everybody's gearing to win their first game, because if you don't, if you know, even if you look at the calendar there, like, you're going to be out week on week on week. Like, you take it, like, say if you wanted to get over the line this weekend, right, you'd have a week off, but then you'd have a qualifier the 10th, 17th, 24th, quarterfinal the 31st, semi-final 7th or 8th of August, and the final on the 22nd. Like, if you don't win this weekend, or you don't win your first game, your calendar is hectic. Mm. And it really is. You're pulling into your panel all the time, you know, week on week on week of championship hurling as well. You know, and then we get to the stage where, you know, you go to qualifiers, knockout. So I think... that they're getting a win in your first round, it's massive. Even just to get that 2 week break, Damien, before you play your next championship game. So while it's not knockout this weekend, I think every team is 100% going to say, we need this, lads, or else it's going to be bang, 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 week on week, and the bodies just mightn't be able to take it. Like.
Okay, well, then let's get stuck into the fixtures themselves. Just three games for us to chat through. We'll build up to the big one on Sunday. At least if we do this chronologically, we won't be accused of favouritism over one team or one county. So we'll start tomorrow afternoon, Navan, 3 o'clock, Dublin against Antrim. Again, we got a taste of what this was going to be like a couple of weeks ago. You know, people are talking about Antrim being the shock of the weekend, but you look at the work that Darren Gleeson has done up there in recent years. Okay, it didn't happen for them in the league, but it would be no surprise if they took what would be a significant scalp for them.
Oh, absolutely. And I was actually on duty 2 years ago, Damien, in Port Laois when Laois beat Dublin. And like, Laois were coming off the back of a Joe McDonagh victory the following week. They played Dublin. I think Matty Kenny will have learned a lot from that, in regards that, you know, did they expect that performance from Laois? They probably didn't. Whereas now, you know, there's no secret here. Like, the cat's out of the bag, in regards that people know now that Antrim are a good team. Like, Antrim finished ahead of Dublin in the league. Like, they have 5 points, Dublin had 4 points. Like, Darren Gleeson could nearly afford to actually rest players against Laois, because, you know, they were safe. Like, so I think that people now, they're saying, oh, Antrim, and they love hurling and all this, you know. Like, I think that's gone now. Like, I mean, okay, they obviously do love hurling, but I mean, maybe we talk about Antrim that, and teams up the north as well, that they have this passion for the GAA. But, like, people have to look at Antrim now, like, they're a very, very good hurling team. And I said it before, like, it's all the work that's going on up there underage for a long time now. And, like, Liam Sheedy was up there before, and now Darren is there bringing his experience. So, like, Antrim, I was only up there at the weekend, Damien, like, you know, and the place is buzzing up there. They really are buzzing, looking forward to this game. And I think, you know, Dublin know now what's coming, and I think that will be a big advantage to Dublin, in that they're not, like, if Antrim, let's say, had lost all their league games, people wouldn't have known what's coming. But I think they know what's coming now. And, you know, the last time they met in championship was 2010, and Antrim actually won that match by a point, 117 to 19 points. Now, they've only played each other 7 times in championship, but, and Dublin have won the other 6. But I mean, like, I just think, you know, the pitch in Navan, you know, the confidence and the buzz that's up around there at the moment, Darren Gleeson, I'd say the boys will be lifting this week of training. They won't be doing much, but I'd say they just cannot wait to get down there tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Antrim would have played there before a bit as well, you know. They'll be used to the setup and the grounds there. So, look, I don't think it's going to be a huge shock, but I actually feel that Antrim, there's a massive performance in them again this weekend, and I'm just going to tip Antrim to get the weekend and get the championship going for everyone, and to sneak a victory against the Dubs, Damien.
Darren is obviously someone you'd know quite well. Has it surprised you the impact he's had up there, or how successful, you know, this fledgling management career has turned out to be?
No, it wouldn't surprise me, I suppose, from playing with him. He was always kind of looking at the game tactically, and especially from the goals, he was able to see everything and see movement, and he was able to pick out passes, and he'd see space as well. And, like, you know, a lot of people might know or might not know, Liam Sheedy is from Darren's club as well. They're neighbours. They've grown up together, hurled together. You know, they know each other. They're best friends as well. So Liam, Darren would have learned a lot from Liam and how to manage a team. And then being up there as well, you know, he's brought really good people in around him. And I think that's what good managers do, Damien. Like, they don't go in and try and take over the thing. Like, Darren might not have been fully aware of the Antrim club scene, or maybe were all the best players playing for Antrim. They probably weren't. But when would have went up there and surrounded himself with really good people that would know an Antrim hurling inside out, would live and die Antrim hurling, you know, would bleed yellow for the cause, but would also be tactically astute and know who the best guys are and how to get them all back. And I think that's the big thing now, you know, for the Antrims of this world, is that they have all their best players playing on the senior hurling team at the moment.
Okay.
And I think that's one of the best things that Darren has done up there, Damien.
Okay, so we'll wait and see if that plays out as planned or as you predict. Laois against Wexford in Nolan Park then tomorrow evening. Not to be disrespectful to Cheddar and the work that's gone on in Laois, but it's hard to see beyond a Wexford win, potentially with a bit of ease.
I totally agree with you, Damien. Look, I think Cheddar Plunkett is one of the best hurling men in Ireland. Was at the Kilkenny County Final a couple of years ago, and he was involved with James Stevens, and just, you know, just see what he does everywhere he goes. Even I heard Ross King talking about him this week, that the impact he has on players. It's not to say that he's not having an impact in this group, he is, but it just doesn't seem to be happening on the field. And, you know, you have to go back to 1985 for the last time that Laois would have bet Wexford in Championship hurling. And, you know, they're in their minds as well. They still have a relegation final to play against Westmeath. They just don't seem to be ticking at the moment. They just don't seem to be performing as a group. Individually, there has been some very good performances, but not as a group. You know, it just doesn't seem to happen. And, like, Wexford bet them 4-17 to 10 points. So, you know, it's a 19-point turnaround you're trying to get, Damien. You know, regardless if it's the league or not, it's still an awful lot. And I just think that Wexford are a team on a mission. I think they're a management team on a mission as well, that, you know, they have their Leinster title now. They've seen how close they came, and I just feel it's probably coming to the end of an era for not the group of players, but I'd say the team, that's the management team they have. And they feel that really success for them this year is getting into an All-Ireland final. And I think, you know, they will see Laois as just another step on the way to doing that. And I just can't see anything except the Wexford victory there at the weekend, Damien.
Like. Okay, game of the weekend then. Thurles on Sunday, Waterford against Clare. And you can look at this in so many ways. Two big characters on the sidelines, two vastly experienced managers. A Waterford team that's been decimated by injuries, but a Clare team that has, you know, maybe question marks over the fitness and the availability of key players. So is this one on a knife edge?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I mean, I was looking at the fixtures there. Even since 2010, they would have played seven times. Waterford have won four, Clare have won three. Now, Waterford had a big win last year, they won by 9 points. But if everyone remembers, Tony Kelly would have went off injured. I think he twisted his ankle early on in the game down at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. But for me, I think Waterford are actually even a better team because of the experience they got from last year, playing a Munster final against Limerick, massive win against Kilkenny and All-Ireland semi-final, and you know, getting to an All-Ireland final while they didn't perform really well. And Liam Cahill and Mikey Beavins would make no bones about that they just didn't perform in the All-Ireland final. I think as a group they have a point to prove, but, like, if you think about it, like, if we were talking this time last year, Damien, you said Waterford, no Stephen O'Keefe, no Dara Fives, no Pádraig Mahony, like, there's just three guys, you know, that you could mention and you'd be worrying, like, and obviously the best at what he does in the game, no Tadhg Na Burka. You'd be saying, "Jason Watford, no way." But I've seen him play a few times in the league, was at their game against Limerick, watched him against Tip the last day. I think Watford are a serious, serious panel now, and that's what they have. And I just think if Conor Prunty and Ozzie Gleeson can be right and get over those little injuries they've had, you know, I really do feel that they will drive on and they will be clear at the weekend. Now, everyone is saying that they probably will, but I think Shane O'Donnell is injured. I believe it's concussion. I think he's a massive loss because I think he was fine in form all the time. Really liked him against Dublin up in Parnell Park. Looks in phenomenal shape, and a lot, you know, while maybe he doesn't get on the ball an awful lot, he does take mind in, and when he does get on the ball, he does usually, 9 times out of 10, does the right thing with the ball. So, and David McInerney as well, Damien, if he's going to be back or not, because just come on against Kilkenny, he was getting on the ball, doing really well, next thing injured again, and your heart will go out to the guy. Like, you know, you can see how professional he is in the way he minds himself and the way he trains, but they're two massive losses, and I think that their loss is bigger than the Tadhg De Burka loss, the Stephen O'Keefe loss, we'll say, for example, for Watford, because I feel Watford have a much stronger panel and they've really bought into the whole culture and the team ethos that Liam Cahill has created down there, you know, in the last year. Like,
Shane, enjoy the weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Damien.
With Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. 51552 for your text if you want to get in touch with us. Let us have a quick look at the Travellers Championship. So, yeah, Seamus Power, he's flying it. He's now 3 under par in the clubhouse, 67 today to move him to 7 under par, currently in a tie for third place, but crucially just one shot off the lead, which is currently held by Bubba Watson and Bryce Garnett. So what a weekend for him it could be. Let's be very honest, when you're in a situation that Seamus Power is in terms of, it's not necessarily about competing for tournaments on a weekly basis, it's about having a couple of big ones over the course of the year that are going to bump you up those FedEx Cup standings and hopefully prolong your interest in maintaining a PGA Tour card. So that is good news from him. Mentioned earlier, Stephanie Meadow, 3 over par after a 3 under par round today at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. Leona Maguire yet to tee off. She'll resume from level par. The lead there is at 8 under par. And Niall Kearney leading the BMW International Open into the weekend. A 4 under par round today, moving him to 11 under par. 2 shots clear of the field. So we've had Shane McGrath looking ahead to the hurling weekend. We're going to look ahead now to the Gaelic football weekend. Delighted to be joined by former Kerry captain Darren O'Sullivan. Darren, how are you?
Good, Damien. How are things?
Not too bad. It's good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. I've no doubt you'll echo Shane was likening it to Christmas Eve, so I'm sure it's the same mood down in Kerry this evening. I'm kind of thinking, not that he would ever let you know what his thoughts are, but what Peter Keane's thoughts must be. You know, had to deal with an awful lot of criticism towards the tail end of last year, a lot of questions asked at the start of the year. The league goes really well, and I would imagine optimism must be quite high in Kerry ahead of the Munster quarterfinal against Clare tomorrow evening.
Yeah, but I suppose they were in this position last year as well. They had a good league campaign, and the feeling was it was all optimism down here this time last year as well, and we got badly caught. So I think you're going to see a different animal this year with Kerry. I think they'll be really tuned in now. I think they'll be fairly wired for this game now. I'd say they've been looking forward to this now for quite a while, and I'd say that, like, by all accounts, the weather's going to be good inside Clare. And, you know, we prefer if there's a big crowd there watching, but I think you'll see a good Kerry performance this weekend.
And when we look at it, I know the mantra that we will hear is that players will only look at one game at a time, but they must be looking at, get over Clare, you have a Tipperary side that are really struggling of late, and all of a sudden a road to a Munster final or a potential Munster title has opened up for you very, very nicely.
Yeah, look, I suppose I had this conversation with Ewan McGee recently. It takes a while to get out of that mindset of trying to give nothing away and saying, oh, it's one game at a time. But realistically, they will be looking further ahead, and that's human nature. They will be thinking we can get over Clare. I do think Clare will give them headaches during the game. I think Clare and Colm Collins are a very good team, probably underappreciated really the stuff they do. I think they'll give them headaches. I do think Kerry will win comfortably, and like that, Tipperary are struggling badly this year, and I think Kerry will be looking, if I was in that dressing room, I'd be looking at Cork on. We owe them after last year. So I think Kerry will be all guns blazing, and whether they say it or not, they will be looking further ahead.
And what's it like, let's be honest, and again, we can be cliched all we want and we can be obvious all we want, that people are going to look at Dublin and question where Dublin are at. Is Cluxton coming back? You know, have they dropped off? You know, what Desi's going to try and do with them. But like, realistically, from a Kerry perspective, would there be much talk about a realistic All-Ireland being in the offing?
I think there is. There has to be. I think even when things aren't going too well, there's always talk of an All-Ireland. My honest opinion is I think Dublin probably have benefited more than anyone from the COVID restrictions and a bit of a break in play, because I think the players needed a mental and physical break, which they got. They have their system and their style of play in place. So when they go back, it's just about now we're fresh and it's a bit of fine-tuning, whereas the likes of Kerry, Donegal and a few of the other pretenders, they're still trying to find the system that works. So I don't think Dublin are pulling further away. I think, not that they're stagnating or anything like that, I don't think they're pulling further away, because you can't continuously get better and better. But the other teams are creeping up on them. Whether they've crept up enough we'll soon find out. Okay. But they'll definitely be looking at Northern Ireland. They'll definitely be thinking, like, if I was in that dressing room now, I would be thinking about Dublin and buying them up.
Okay, so Kerry to beat Clare to set up a Munster semi against Tipperary. Limerick or Waterford face off in the other quarter final tomorrow. Who's going to come out on top to go on to meet Cork?
I'd be extremely shocked if it wasn't Limerick. They've put an awful lot of effort into their underage system over the last couple of years. I think they're starting to see the rewards of that. They did a good league campaign. They seem to be progressing in the right direction. And even last year they were unlucky. I think it was Conor Sweeney got that outrageous outside the left score late in the game to bring it to extra time. So it could have been a very different year last year. So I'd be expecting Limerick to win that.
Okay. To move on to the game in Connacht tomorrow afternoon, Sligo against Mayo in the quarterfinal there. The winner of this will set up a semi-final against Leitrim. Like, not to be dismissive of Sligo, but, you know, it's going to take the shock of all shocks for Sligo to get a result against Mayo. The big question, I suppose, from a Mayo perspective is, how are you going to shape up without Killian O'Connor, and who's going to step up and fill the gulf that is missing as a result of his absence?
I don't think they'll feel his absence tomorrow. I think it's later on down the line where I think Mayo will really struggle without him. Obviously, Aidan O'Shea is back, but they're two totally different players. So it'll be exciting, to be honest. It'll be interesting to watch the game and who does stand up, and will they have to change their style of play to go into this game like that? I expect Mayo to win. I expect them to win comfortably. But it will be interesting to see who does stand up, where they play Aidan O'Shea. Is he going to be out the field, or do they want to use him closer to goal again? Like that, I think I don't think anyone's going to be putting money on Sligo to beat Mayo the weekend.
Okay, move on to Sunday then, down against Donegal. And, you know, a lot of people talking about how the Ulster teams approach the league, and are we going to see a completely different style of play? You look at these two teams at the weekend, and obviously Donegal will have strong aspirations of advancing throughout the summer, but the schedule, like, you wouldn't fancy being the last team standing on the 1st of August, having come through Ulster and then having to face into All-Ireland semi-finals just a couple of weeks later.
Yeah, like, to be honest, Donegal are probably one of my favourite teams at the moment to watch outside of Kerry, obviously. But and I think, similar enough to Kerry last year, I think they got caught. I think they took their eye off it a small bit and got caught, and I think they'll be able to make amends this year. I'm excited to see what they'll bring to the table. I can't see them having too many difficulties this weekend, but like that, it's a tough slog for them. Like the Division 1 this year, I always felt it was going to be very tough on the Ulster teams, because it was always going to be shadow boxing, because they have bigger issues to be looking forward to. So it'll be interesting to see a lot of what they do like that. I think we all saw how poor Tyrone were against Kerry, and you're there going, can they improve that much in 2 or 3 weeks? It'll be interesting, but like that, I'm excited to see Donegal. I think they're one of the most exciting teams out there. I think they will have a realistic chance of kicking on this year, and they'll be looking at probably aiming for an All-Ireland as well as Kerry.
Okay, then Leinster, Offaly against Loud, Wicklow against Wexford, Carlow against Longford. What can we expect from the first round of the Leinster Championship?
It's hard to know. I think Offaly are a team that seem to be on the up, hurling and football. They seem to be going in the right direction again. They have a bit of optimism as well up there, I think, at the moment, and obviously with Shane Lowry getting involved as well. So I think that'll be an interesting game. The other teams, they're hard to call. Neither of the teams had the great league campaigns. Like Wicklow seems to have gone backwards again the last couple of years. So like that, I don't think there'll be too much excitement. I think a lot of them teams, they'll probably be exciting games because they'll be very tight. But I wouldn't be expecting too much from the other four teams. No, to be fair, none of them really had good league campaigns either, so they don't have much form going into it.
Just overall, how much of a difference in terms of the mentality and the mindset of the weekend does the fact that there's no it's a trapdoor, there's no safety net. Like, is that a serious narrative to have around the weekend, or is that something that people, you know, who don't understand how teams approach these things might look at that doesn't actually exist?
Yeah, I think, like, that's the hard thing, I suppose, for players. Like, it's one of the things I'm glad I'm not playing anymore, when you put so much effort into them. One bad performance, one bad game, and you're gone. There's no second chance. So it is going to make every game that bit more exciting. You know, like we were on with the Leinster games there, they will be quite tight, and they'll make it exciting, the fact that you don't get a second chance. It's all or nothing in the 70-odd minutes, which will add to it. But at the same time, all that effort, all that training, all that sacrifice for 70-odd minutes where it just mightn't be your day, you might just have an off day, a couple of bad calls, referee calls or whatever. You know, so I think it takes a bit from the whole thing. I think it adds a bit of excitement on the day, but it's very unfair, I think, on teams to put all that effort in and be gone.
Yeah, particularly if you experience the same thing last year and it happens to you 2 years in a row and your championship outings are very, very limited as a result. So anyway, we're going to lose seven teams, irrespective of what you and I think. It's not going to change the landscape of the weekend. Darren, enjoy the games. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Darren O'Sullivan with us there, looking ahead to the weekend. A lot more still to come on the programme. We are going to be chatting soccer and racing with Jane Mangan ahead of the Derby weekend. All of that still to come. Stay with us.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on football.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. We're going to chat soccer next. We'll get stuck into Euro 2020 and the night's action in the SSE Airtricity League. But before all of that, let's perhaps speculate more about transfers. Fergal Brennan, journalist, joins us from the UK. Fergal, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Yourself?
Good, very good, thank you. I have two things I want to get out of the way before we chat about football itself. I know you're obviously your finger on the pulse around the North West and Merseyside in particular. Is it now a case of when rather than if Rafa Benitez will be donning the blue of Everton rather than the red of Liverpool, with which he's so familiar?
It does seem to be the case that's the way it's moving in. It's been a very, very slow process this week. The talks have been ongoing with Farhad Moshiri and the Everton board. Obviously, there's a kind of a split between the Everton fan base. There's a lot of objections, not just due to his connection with Liverpool, but because perceptions of his tactics at Newcastle, that a lot of Everton fans are unhappy that he would bring with him to Goodison. It looks as if it is almost done, but we've seen a strange summer with managerial appointments that were essentially signed, but then suddenly ripped up and thrown in the bin. Eddie Howe at Celtic. There's been three or four different candidates with Tottenham that have been a done deal and then magically suddenly were off the table again. This does look to be really, really close, but we're operating in a very strange situation in terms of appointments in the Premier League in the last month or so. So it could all just go dramatically wrong. Mm. But I do get the impression that from Everton's point of view, from Moshiri's point of view, they've made the decision that they want Rafa. If Rafa is not appointed, that will be a decision that he makes rather than the club.
I'm just thinking, I know it's difficult to generalise, but if you look at, like, he is a god on the red side of Merseyside, won a Champions League, brought the club to the verge of a Premier League. I think a lot of people feel that he was kind of a voice of reason at the time of difficulties with the initial American owners. I don't know. I don't think Liverpool fans would lose the head altogether at him going to Merseyside or going to Everton. But then when you look at a situation where not only did he once call Everton a small club, but when he was offered the chance to kind of rein those comments back in, he doubled down on them even more. So you would imagine you wouldn't fancy being the Everton director of communications trying to brief him about what will be the obvious onslaught of questions that will come along those lines in the opening press conference.
No, that'd be a difficult gig to organise, that one. But I think a lot of Everton fans that I've spoken to have been relatively pragmatic in the way that they're looking at this, and his comments about Everton are obviously going to irk Everton fans and rile them up. But the other point that I've heard from a lot of supporters is he was the manager of our biggest rivals. Of course he is going to say that at that time. And you know, you point to the comments that he made about Manchester United, his famous facts list that he brought out about Sir Alex Ferguson, and you know, he had issues with Jose Mourinho at Chelsea. He wasn't frightened to face up to these big managers and their rivals of Liverpool when he was in charge. And I don't think it'd necessarily be water under the bridge, but I think it's par for the course when you are the manager of a specific club. I think he knew exactly what he was saying would have the effect that it had on Everton at that time. Mm. And in terms of the comments itself, I I do think there's, as I say, a lot of pragmatism coming from Everton, where they look at the other options on the table, and he is towards the better half of what they're in a position to get.
Just a word on transfers, and again, like I've said it a couple of times over the course of the week, that we're just waiting for one to start the ball rolling. A lot of talk this evening about Jack Grealish to Manchester City, but a lot of the talk is that for it to happen, Raheem Sterling is going to have to go to Aston Villa. I can't see Raheem Sterling making that decision unless he's told that there's no other option for him at Manchester City.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Sterling arguably didn't have his greatest season at City last year, despite the fact that they won the league. Whether or not Grealish goes to City or even potentially to Manchester United, I can't see Sterling being used as a make-weight in it. And the fee, just quickly being talked about, is £100 million, according to ESPN and The Athletic and a few others today. That would break City's transfer record by nearly £40 million. And I think we're talking about an enormous bridge between the way they've operated previously and the way they would have to go about it to bring Jack Grealish to the club. And I just don't think Sterling fancies it. I think with the greatest respect to Villa, it'd be a big step down for Sterling when he has had a relatively OK season last season and has done well for England this summer.
OK, we will see how that plays out. Conan Byrne joins us as well. Conan, how are you?
I'm not too bad, Damien. How are you?
Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. So we can switch attention from the speculation of transfers to the certainties of the European games over the weekend. Just Euro 2020, you know, we've all really enjoyed it. I think a lot of people had concerns about the expanded tournament and the multi-city and would it work, and it has worked. How wide open, Conan, do you see it now that we know who the round of 16 teams are?
Yeah, I think it's wide open. I think like the likes of the Belgium-Portugal game is going to be very, very interesting. I think the winner of England-Germany has a great chance of making it through to the final. I think the standard of refereeing overall in the tournament has been extraordinary, being totally honest. I'd be very critical of the refereeing in other major tournaments over the last number of years. So it's great to see that being taken a back seat, I suppose. There's no real refereeing controversies. VAR hasn't played a big part in decisions either. So, yeah, and 36-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo doing what he does best. Leading top goal scorer as well. So
you should never have retired, Conan. You could have. There's still life in you yet.
I know, same age as him and all, Damien. I could have, definitely could have. There is life in me yet, but sure, you know yourself. I have to give it up sometime.
And I have a couple of years on you. I know it all too well. we look at those games over the weekend, like Wales against Denmark, and you know, like thankfully, Denmark have built momentum out of what could have been an immensely tragic situation. And the way they are being spoken about from that opening game to now heading into the quarterfinals, you just kind of get that sense that there's just something happening, don't you, Conan?
Yeah, I think so, Damien. And like obviously the Christian Eriksen scare would have been huge emotional, I don't know, just huge emotion going around the group. And it's a remarkable achievement even to get through the group stages considering what happened again in the Finland game to Christian Eriksen. I think Mikael Damsgaard has stepped up unbelievably. Young 20-year-old, the youngest Danish scorer at the Euros. I see him as probably the young player of the tournament so far. He's been absolutely incredible since that game against Finland. He's done really, really well against Belgium. And then getting on the score sheet against Russia, I've been really impressed. But I think we've got to remember that Denmark came into this tournament as some people's dark horses. I thought they were really, really impressive in qualifying. They've got some excellent players. Obviously, the loss of Christian Eriksen is absolutely huge. But the way that team has come together over the last 7-10 days has been, as I said, nothing short of remarkable. And that togetherness will probably see them through this game against Wales.
Fergal, just to look at the other game tomorrow. So Wales-Denmark, 5 o'clock in Amsterdam. Italy-Austria, 8 o'clock. Italy, having played in Rome, now moved to Wembley. We wonder how that would impact on them. But yet to concede a goal in the tournament, unbeaten now in 30 games. You know, Fergal, they are very firmly amongst the favourites for this tournament.
They are indeed, and only really now, or maybe in the last few days, are people starting to put them into that conversation. And that's exactly what Roberto Mancini will have wanted. He doesn't want to have the pressure of a Belgium or a France or a defending champion like Portugal. He's confident in his players and that they know exactly what they have to do. And the record that you mentioned in terms of unbeaten, they also haven't conceded a goal in, I think it's 11 or 12 games, 3 games in the group they've won. They haven't really, you know, had a scratch on them so far. Austria will be a bit of a test, but I personally think they probably hit their level in the competition. They looked good in the first game against North Macedonia, but the Netherlands were too strong for them, and then the Ukraine game was a bit of a toss of the coin to get them into the last 16. It's good for them to get in there, but I think this is the end of the road for them. And as for Italy, they're in the, quote, tougher half of the draw. If they get through this, it's going to be Belgium or Portugal in the quarterfinals, and that'll be the first big test. I've been massively impressed by them, but ultimately it's really difficult to judge a team until they've had a real test. And that's going to be something that anyone who comes up against any of the three teams from Group F are going to face. No one in that group is coming out undercooked, whereas there's the danger that other teams potentially are.
And so then, Fergal, to move on to Sunday, Netherlands against Czech Republic at 5 o'clock. Again, almost the build-up to the game has been overshadowed by Jeannie Wijnaldum and his assertion that if there's issues of a racial persuasion, that he will lead the team off the pitch, and we'll see how that progresses. Obviously, it's a very hot topic, particularly games that have been staged in Budapest. But the Dutch, again, you know, big opposition for them in the Czech Republic, but you know, they've looked more than capable of tackling whatever opposition has been in their way.
Yeah, but quickly on Wijnaldum, I did read that this morning. You would back that type of a decision 100%. I think we've reached a position now where a firm stance on racism and racist abuse of players is long overdue. Obviously, we hope that it doesn't happen, but if it does and he makes that decision, I think that would be a real statement that this needs to stop. In terms of the game, I would almost say it's a little bit of a copy and paste job from Italy against Austria. Netherlands are powered through the group, 3 wins from 3. They have looked impressive. Wijnaldum has been excellent in front of goal, and Memphis Depay, fresh on the back of that move to Barcelona, looks really hungry for it. And the Czech Republic, similarly to Austria, obviously the win against Scotland in the first game, but since then they've only had 2 shots on target in 2 games, and one of them was a penalty that they scored against Croatia. So I do think their race is run a little bit. The Netherlands find themselves in the kind of slightly easier side of the draw. It would be Wales or Denmark for them if they get through, and they'd fancy themselves to win that, and then they're into the last four. And you know, in that type of a situation, whether it's Germany or England that they come up against in the last four, with the confidence that's running through them, they could potentially cause a bit of a splash.
And Fergal, very briefly, give us your thoughts on Belgium against Portugal, which could hopefully be the game of the weekend.
It's a difficult one to gauge. I think it's a bit of a golden boot race as well, Lukaku up against Ronaldo. I've been kind of disappointed with Portugal so far this tournament. They had to wait so long to crack the nut against Hungary, and then they just kind of laboured along in the next 2 games. Belgium have looked really good. Again, there's the argument of maybe being a little bit under-tested, but I just look at their important players, Lukaku, De Bruyne, they look absolutely hungry for it, whereas in the Portugal team, it just looks like Ronaldo. So I'd probably tip just for Belgium in that one.
Fergal, thanks for being with us. Conan's going to stay with us. We're going to look ahead to the League of Ireland. The league leaders, St. Pat's, which Conan will like the sound of, are away to Waterford tonight at the RSC for us. Ray Scott.
For the second week in a row, the Blues welcome the league leaders to the RSC. Last week's visit of Shamrock Rovers saw 3-1 defeat for the home side, but after a well-earned 3 points on Monday evening in Longford, the confidence is back on Shoreside. Alan Matthews will be looking to the in-form Ronan Coughlin, who made it 4 goals in 3 games with the brace against Finn Harps on Monday, while the return of Dara Burns after injury has also been a boost. Interestingly, there's not been a draw between the sides since their FAI Cup quarterfinal in September 2009.
Conan, you must nearly have the bus booked now for the homecoming at this stage, do you?
Will you stop? There's a long way to go. I think even Bohemians have a good chance of
always the bitter word. Come here, look at the league table. So we've Pats away to Waterford tonight. Shamrock Rovers entertain Drogheda. Sligo Rovers Bowes, that's third against Fort Meath tomorrow night. Dundalk against Derry, Harps against Longford. You look at it, it is brilliant that here we are 17 games into the league. We're heading towards the midway point and there's no one running away with it. Every team has had a blip and you would hope that it's going to stay like that for the foreseeable future.
It's been like that for the majority of the season, Damien. It's great to see, because over the last number of years, as you know, there's only been two horse races. And but with Dundalk and Derry this evening, it's the farewell, the last dance, I suppose, for Chris Shields at Dundalk. 9 years service to the club. He's won absolutely everything that there is to win in domestic football, and he's going for pastures new up at Linfield in the Northern Irish Football League. So we wish him well in that. But yeah, Pats are kind of... Look, they've been hit and miss. I'll be totally honest with you, Damien. They were impressive in the first opening 5 games, and then they kind of dropped off a little bit coming up to the mid-season break. But since they've come back, they've been absolutely immense. And what I've loved about St. Pat's is that their top three are all scoring goals. It's not just one player, like we mentioned in the report there, but Ronan Coughlin has scored 4 goals in 3 games. But you've also Billy King and Matty Smith chipping in, and those three players have combined for double-figure goals. So it doesn't have to rely on just one player to score the goals. I remember when we won the league with St. Pat's in 2013, not one of the attacking three had more than 10 goals, but we all had 9 goals. That's equivalent to 27, which was a very, very good return, and ultimately it led us to the league title. So it doesn't necessarily mean that if you don't have a 20-goal striker, you're not going to win the league. So the way they're playing, at the moment, as I said, 3 wins from 3. They're doing really, really well. Away to Waterford, they'll fancy their chances to win that and get on to 37 points.
Yep, long may it continue, and they might benefit when everyone else gets distracted by Europe as well. So we'll wait and see how that plays out. Conan, good to chat to you as always. Thanks for being with us.
You too, Damien. Take
Conan
care.
Byrne with us there. First division games tonight at Lone host Bray. Cabinteely at home to UCD. Shells, who nearly have the whole thing sewn up already, are at home to Cork City. And it's Treaty United at home to Galway. We're going to chat racing with Jane Mangan in 3 minutes.
Your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on. Racing.
And we're going to look ahead to what is a really, really busy weekend of racing. Jane Mangan is with us. As always, Jane, how are you?
I'm very well, and I'm looking very excitedly towards 3 days of brilliant racing at the Curragh. It's a Derby festival, not like our usual, but we have a few people back at the track tomorrow. And that's very exciting.
And Camira, when we look at some of the people that are arriving at the track over the weekend, plenty of big names making the journey across the Irish Sea and hoping to take the smiles off the faces of Irish jockeys and trainers.
That is so true. The Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby is a coveted race, and it is one that has attracted a number of overseas runners and riders. Frankie Dettori will team up with the Lone Eagles for Martin Mead. William Buick aboard Hurricane Lane, who is third in the Epsom Derby for Charlie Appleby. And Mojo Starr, the runner-up at Epsom. Ross Ryan coming home to Ireland to ride this horse for Richard Hannon. So we have the 2nd, 3rd and 4th from Epsom all lining up in the Irish Derby. So we're really going to test the form of Epsom. But the market leader is the home horse. Ballydoyle Challenger, high definition. He was 2 from 2 last year as a juvenile. We've only seen him once this year when he was 3rd behind Hurricane Lane in the Beresford. He skipped Epsom with preference to the Curragh in mind. And Aidan O'Brien has won this race 14 times. Isn't that extraordinary? 14 times a winner of the Irish Derby. He's got 5 runners. Van Gogh is another horse to put in your notebook. Wordsworth was a runner-up at Royal Ascot last week. But High Definition is seemingly the one the market is favouring.
And when we look at it, the inevitabilities in life, death, taxes, and Aidan O'Brien will win the Derby. So is it a penalty kick for him with the runners he has in the field this weekend?
No such thing as a penalty kick. Absolutely not. Especially when you have the Epsom form coming over. This is a really deep, multi-dimensional Irish Derby. Max Swinney is a Guineas winner. He's a classic winner. High Definition has to improve an all-known form to turn it around with Hurricane Lane from York. And I think the horse Lone Eagle, don't underestimate Frankie Dettori here. And it's not all about Aidan O'Brien and the home team either. We mentioned Jim Bulger's Max Swinney. Earlswood there for Johnny Murta has been supplemented for a cost of €75,000. He's not going to throw that money away. It's €1 million purse. The Irish Derby is always a coveted race. It'll be watched all over the world. And this has got 11 runners, and each of them with a chance.
Now, speaking of being watched all over the world, it's a race that's, or it's a weekend that has plenty of races that are watched for form as well. We've the Railway Stakes, won by the subsequent 2000 Guineas winner Siskin in 2019. So is this a race this weekend that we can look at for another big star to come forward?
Well, I'd hope so. Maseto is in there, the form from Royal Ascot. You've Castle Star, who won the Marble Hill. There's 14 runners. There's very smart two-year-olds in here, but this is where they step up in grade. And let's see who sinks their swim.
Okay, and then we look ahead then to Sunday, the Pretty Polly Stakes. 8 runners. I suppose Santa Barbara's the one that everyone is looking at. Is there much other value or much other competition beyond that?
Well, she's the hype horse, so she really has to deliver on that so far. I think Thundering Knight, coming back from America, having won a Group 1 out there for Joseph O'Brien, is filly that they all have to beat. Kay and Pepper is the highest rated filly in there for Jessica Harrington and Shane Foley. But the Pretty Polly Stakes, it'll revolve around Santa Barbara's reputation. But she has to improve to beat her older fillies. She's getting £12 from them. It's a significant weight advantage. But in all known form, 10 furlongs could be her ideal trip. We'll find out on Sunday.
Can I just very quickly before we let you go, like a couple of jockeys that went over to Royal Ascot did talk about the shock to the senses it was having a crowd back. And will that be part of the narrative around the weekend, how people react to the increased noise or the increased attention?
You know, it mightn't even be the reaction of the people, but the reaction of the horses, because the three-year-old generation of horses and, of course, the two-year-old generation of horses will have never seen a crowd before. So it's interesting to see how some of them behave when they eventually do. But bear in mind, it's only 1,000 people here tomorrow. It's a pilot event run under the guidance of the government, and it's a much-needed improvement on what we've had for the last 18 months. And hopefully, it's a sign of things to come.
Yeah, and you're hanging out with Trouble tomorrow. Yourself, Hugh and Ruby on TV tomorrow and Sunday from 2 o'clock on RTE2. Jane, look forward to watching in and enjoy the weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Jane Mangan rounding off the programme. A busy week, and again, as mentioned, coverage on RTE2 television, coverage of the Euros on RTE television. The Sunday game is back. GAA Championship action across radio, television, online. New programme on Radio 1 this evening with Damien Lawler, called The Championship at 10 o'clock. It includes an interview with Kieran Sheehan, who announced his retirement as a result of injury earlier in the week. And really interesting to hear him reflect on his career and that decision definitely prematurely hang up his boots. So just to recap, Seamus Power tied for third place at the Travellers Championship, 7 under par after his second round, one shot off the lead there. Leona Maguire, we are still waiting for her to tee off at the Women's PGA Championship, the third major of the year in women's golf. She'll resume from level par. The lead there is at 7 under. Stephanie Meadow back in the clubhouse on 3 over par, and Niall Kearney flying it at the BMW International Open leads the tournament by 2 shots at 11 under par. That brings an end to the programme. Thank you very much for your company. I'll be back on Monday. A word of thanks to our broadcast coordinator, Laura Lee Davies. The programme produced by Ronan Lawler. From Damien O'Mara, until we chat again, thank you very much for your time. Stand by for Blonde's on the way with the chart show.